Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bum in the Bloom, episode 196. This is our second baseball HQ forecaster discussion show. We're going to have two guests tonight. We had three guests on Thursday, if you want to check that out. Lots of fun there. We got two for you tonight. One is a third time joining us for the forecaster shows. This is our third year of doing the shows. This is a fun one. He's a busy man. This guy does all the football and a ton of baseball, and he crushes it in both. You can find him over on Twitter at Corbin_Young21. Corbin Young, how we doing, my friend?
Hey, what's up? Yeah, I'm doing well. Like we talked about before, it's busy. You know, this is the fantasy football championship week, and trying to get my brain into baseball besides the forecaster, and it's hard because, you know, you got to open up a new tab that you haven't seen in like 4 months.
Yeah. Yeah, you get to go look at baseball. Just for fun, before we get into it, what's the first tab you open up for baseball?
Usually, if I'm looking at player-specific, it's like I'm looking at the baseball HQ stuff, and then obviously, like, other things I'm pulling up. Like, for at least for forecaster, we're looking at the RotoWire stuff, like, make sure that I'm not missing an injury or news and that kind of thing, and then the other supporting, you know, Fangraphs and Baseball Savant, of course.
Sweet. Will, we appreciate you joining us again. I believe Ryan, are you his editor, correct?
I am. Yeah. I get to go back and forth with Corbin throughout October. It's fun. Corbin's an extremely hard worker. And again, I don't know how, because the football stuff you're putting out right now, and at least through the season, at least in October, that's what, week like 5, 6, 7 of football. There's a lot of interest in it, so I don't know how you do it, man. But we'll talk about that for a little bit. But one thing you left out, Bub, on the intro, by the way, not to critique you.
Oh no,
FSWA Baseball Writer of the Year, Corbin Young.
I apologize. I'm so sorry. Congratulations. That's outstanding.
It was a year ago, but say.
I'm surrounded by multiple FSWA Writer of the Years right now, and then there's me. So that's fun.
Well, just to rub it in even more. So our other guest on this episode later on will be Ray Murphy, who has also won Baseball Writer of the Year.
As most say, I'm a great host. So that's what I'm here for.
you're the point guard.
I just directed the ship. You guys bring the goods, and I'll take it home. Don't you worry about me.
I love twisting the knife whenever I can, Corbin. So I saw the opportunity and I took it, as I usually do.
This is why Ryan and I get along so well. So let's kind of get into it here, Corbin. Everyone should know you by now, but if they don't, we'll start from the basics here and we'll work through it through the HQ stuff. But you don't just do the forecaster for HQ, obviously. What else do you do for HQ? Because I know, again, we know what you do, and it's awesome. Awesome stuff, because you dive into things that my brain can't comprehend half the time. But what else do you write for or do for HQ?
Yeah, so I do the American League Facts and Flukes. That's kind of what I started with. So just looking at skills of 5 American Leaguers each week and kind of sorting through that. And then I added the Arsenal Report, which is like the kind of pitcher, you know, more deep dive breakdown. And I've been splitting that with Brant Chesser the past couple of seasons. So, yeah, those are kind of the two main things that I do kind of in season with Baseball HQ that is a lot of fun. So, yeah.
Yeah, that was the one I was kind of hinting at, because that Arsenal report is some gold. That's some really good stuff. It's deep, but it's like understandable for people like me. And it's pretty awesome stuff. So that was the one I was hinting at. Facts and Flukes are always great. It's a staple of HQ. But yeah, that Arsenal report's pretty good.
Yeah, that's the stuff that Brent just lets me go wild on. So thank you for that.
Perfect.
Yeah, you guys go deep into both you and Brent. Just not only like pitch mix changes, but movement and everything on pitchers. It's pretty sweet. So I don't know. Want to talk about forecaster?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Writing process. So we asked this to Chris on our last episode, maybe to you last year as well. But like, I'm always just curious, because I always like get this feeling of like, not dread, but like, I have a whole blank page ahead of me. When I assign you a page, you get a blank Excel file. Like, you start diving into a blank box, what stuff do you look at? What's your process kind of like for writing at least that first draft?
Yeah, I think it starts with, and Brent and Ray usually send this out, and you always remind us, like, just to go look back at last year's and just see what I wrote, yeah. See what other people wrote, just kind of see the flow, because it's just a different way of how we normally write and talk about players, because it has to be so succinct, and just kind of starting with that and just kind of refreshing. You know, there's some minor kind of details when we're talking about like a player that hasn't had a whole lot of plate appearance, those kind of things. So just like little things of like, oh yes, reminding myself, that kind of thing, right? Because you know, the other parts are the easy part, right? Is like kind of looking at what's there and what isn't, but just kind of making sure I got the process and the kind of the basis of that. And then, yeah, you know, like you said, you sent out the pages. I usually just kind of scan through the Excel file and just see what I've got and kind of see if, you know, kind of look at it a bit. And then I just, my normal thing, just pop open all the tabs, you know, the Baseball HQ, check the RotoWire if there's any injuries and then any, you know, anything else that I can't find with that. I look at FanGraphs or StatCast, but everything's pretty much in that box, which is like beautiful, and I barely have to look any further unless there's something that, you know, kind of looks weird or stands out, and just to double check on. But yeah, I mean, pretty basic. I think the most challenging part of my process is probably just keeping it like the 3 to 4 sentences, and, you know, just, yeah. And it's like, I'll get to the fourth sentence and I'll be like, whoa, this one's too long. And then I've got to clean it up. And I'm so used to just kind of like we talked about with the Arsenal report or other things, just being able to go pretty deep. And, you know, when you're asked to shorten up your things, when you're writing in details, that's probably the hardest part. So nothing super special or anything. So.
And that's kind of what I wanted to ask you. You mentioned the tightening the details. So for someone that goes from like, you know, Facts and Flukes is kind of, it's not formulaic by any means, but you kind of have a structure to what you're doing on Facts and Fluke. And then you have your Arsenal report where you said, Brent just lets you go, lets you do your thing and have fun going to it. We asked previous writers about this, condensing it down into these boxes where this is the part I say it too many times. People by now are probably fed up with me. It's just impressive that you can do this. What's your process to condense? Like, is there a certain like skill set or something you try to focus on more to highlight when you're doing it compared to just, you know, giving the whole shebang about a person, but you have to do it like in three sentences?
Yeah. I guess I do kind of have a process with that. Yeah. And part of it, just working with Ryan for a couple of years now and just kind of having
you don't have to credit him. It's okay.
A good flow. And no, I've got it. I mean, help kind of, you know, write it down. I'm not a pat on the back person. I'll definitely give it where it's due, but I'm not. I think it's just starting with the flow of like I said, I start with like, I look at, was there any injuries, right? If there's not a whole lot of plate appearances or I'm just double checking that there wasn't anything kind of going on, or maybe there's a player just kind of being benched a lot or whatever. So I start with this kind of like the injury / this like season recap kind of quick thing. And then I kind of go into any of the skills that are notable that maybe are, you know, actionable or kind of noisy or way outlier levels. And then I'll kind of summarize it up into just like, you know, is this something we should be paying attention to, or, you know, or is this kind of just like a, you know, maybe not. And I know people probably talk about this, but we try to really talk about it as like kind of without the team. Right. So we're kind of looking at it just like player specific of like, you know, not being like, this player is going to be back on this team and they're going to be amazing. So we
that's kind interesting.
Of take that piece out of it. So.
Okay. That's cool. Yeah. I didn't even think about taking the team out part. If that's been mentioned, I missed it. I apologize, but that's an interesting way to think about it as well.
Yeah. The team thing's interesting. Cause this is, you think about it, it's a hard copy book. And so like the second we put it out there, it's, I don't want to say it's obsolete, but it's a moment of time. And so if we start writing about, I don't know, Charlie Blackmon, maybe that's a bad example, but on the Rockies, and then he retires, all of a sudden or, you know, someone gets traded or whatever. We talk about Cody Bellinger and at Wrigley, and then he gets traded, then it's kind of irrelevant. So we try and keep the team stuff out of it. I'm curious. I don't know So I'm going to side rail things just a little bit. This is somewhat on the outline, but with the whole team thing, I don't know how many of our listeners play fantasy football. I'm in one we were talking about before. I'm in one league every year. I finished last year, so I had the first pick this year, and I was blessed to pick Christian McCaffrey. So not only like do you, so I'm actually asking for my own benefit, Corbin, but like not only how do you balance writing baseball with football at the same time, but like what's kind of the biggest difference in player analysis between analyzing player in football versus analyzing a player in baseball?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I think and maybe it's just kind of how I was trained, but I'm definitely more skill based in baseball, and there's not quite the equivalent in football, although I guess we could argue that like a player's talent or whatever that means to someone would mean that. So I think it's, I kind of look at things in buckets of like skills, you know, health and like some playing time or whatever. But I know the playing time is hard, especially when we're talking about baseball or the baseball forecaster. I'm not, you know, supposed to be projecting how this player fits in the X lineup because we're trying to take that out. Football, I mean, we're mostly looking at it like volume and efficiency, you know, in my opinion. And then, you know, diving into kind of the deeper stuff that sometimes I feel like leads me to an answer, but on Sunday, the answer becomes completely wrong in football. Yeah. Right, like
for sure, yeah. I know there's a ton of variance in like week to week, but I do think like football, like you could have a really skilled player, but if it's a receiver in an offense without a quarterback or something, then that like that team context seems to matter a little bit more.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah. Like we could argue that we have probably some of the worst quarterbacks or backup quarterbacks that we've ever had in the NFL. So it doesn't matter who's throwing to Malik Nabers or these, you know, high-end talented receivers. It really just doesn't matter. It could be great. They could link up on broken coverage, or it could be totally awful. It doesn't matter how good we think they are.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Now that makes it, that would make a fantasy, a forecaster for football, like very tough, because so much depends on where you're at. But anyway, that's my football side. I don't really play much football, but that's interesting. The difference between the two. And how you analyze guys.
Yeah, and I think even just at the, like if we add in that prospect piece, right? Like I think even in baseball, like prospects make a wave, but maybe not as big of a wave yearly that football does, right?
True.
Yeah. Like, you know, you're going to get your Marvin Harrison Jr., you know, Malik Nabers, these rookies that are making impacts right now, but then that, you know, and then you know, some guys are relevant that's on the same team or running back, right? Like,
No, that's interesting. It makes sense. Like with baseball,
that's kind of how it goes. So it's a little trickier.
And it makes sense with baseball, much like the skill set. Cause you can at least look at the skills, and over a long season, you can hopefully project something in that world, because in the end, even if you're on a bad team, if say it's a pitcher, the pitcher is facing the hitters. Like you'd hope your defense is good enough, but in the end, the skill set's the skill set, where like you said, if it's, I know we keep, you know, New York Giants fans, I apologize, but Malik Nabers, like Daniel Jones, let's face it, you know, Drew Locke, like it's just DeVito. It's not great any way you look at it. So that's a pretty tough situation. So,
yeah. It would kind of be like if we had a team that, or like, let's say half of the baseball teams had awful starting rotations. Like that'd be a brutal thing to, like, then we'd be rolling out like, you know, these SP4/5s and being like, oh, this is normal. Like this guy's a part of my lineup. And it's like
Chicago White Sox said, what's up? Yeah. That's for sure. For sure. That's interesting. Let's take it a little more into the forecaster here though. And one of the fun parts is, you know, you guys write your boxes, you have your players that you cover. Who was your favorite box, or if you have a couple, go for it, but who was your favorite box that you wrote up this year?
Yeah, got a few notables. I'm not the biggest like humor person in writing, so I got to inject a little bit of humor when one of my boxes was Anthony Rendon. So I think one of my lines was like Rendon and the word injury have the same amount of letters in it. So
that's good.
And so, you know, but I don't inject a whole lot in there, but you know, safe to say, I don't, you know, it is what it is. You look at the box and it's just ugly, and it's fun, but it's also just like, what are we even looking at? And then, you know, two pitchers, I can't go away without talking about two pitchers. I think, you know, like we talked about how the process of how we do these boxes, we don't get to fit a lot of information in there sometimes, you know, some of it gets left out. You know, there's been a lot of times where I'm like, oh, I just want to talk about this guy's new pitch, or I just want to add this one thing in there, but I can't. So I got to sneak that in with Bryce Miller with the splitter, and then Mason yep. Miller with just kind of the three pitches with a 20% swinging strike rate or higher. So I got to mix a little bit in there. So that made my heart warm a little.
One of your pages was all Miller, or pretty much all Millers. It was yeah. Bobby, Bryce, Eric Miller, who the hell is Eric Miller?
I know, I think
Mason I think Miller asked, and Tyson Miller.
I'm looking I think at it right I asked Ryan, I was like, am I supposed to do all of these? Or like, are these real people? Or what?
Like, it is funny. Like some pages you get and you're like, all right, this is good. And then some others, it's like, ooh. But yeah, the Millers, they roll deep this year.
Real quick. This was the page. Miles Mikolas, Bobby Miller, Bryce Miller, Eric Miller, Mason Miller, Tyson Miller, and then to top it off, Hobie Milner. That is the who's who of what is going on. Bright side is Corbin got one of his favorite starting pitchers. So on that loaded rotation in Seattle. So that's good, I guess.
Yeah. And one of the things, so like one of the, I know when, and Corbin kind of alluded to this, we have this kind of like these guides when the forecaster first starts out, and it's, you know, we want to try as much as possible to keep the analysis to the stats that are in the box. But I think one of the areas where at least I, and I know Corbin has done in his boxes, is veer from that is we don't have like pitch. I mean, it's a small box. You can only fit so much stuff is have pitch mix stuff in there. So I always kind of lean, if there is a skill and change in skills and there is a pitch mix change to back it up, I think that's relevant to throw that in there in the box. And Corbin, you definitely did that with the Bryce Miller splitter. I think that was a good ad and a pretty big reason why our guy had a sub-3 ERA, a sub-1 WHIP last year. So,
all right. What was one of your toughest boxes to write this year when you're checking it out?
You know, I promise this wasn't scripted, but
Eric Miller,
Hobie Milner, Luis Rengifo was probably a tough one.
Oh,
do we have my name right now?
I think my power's going out right now. What just happened right there?
No, it was tough because I think there are just a lot of different skill changes, right? There was like better plate discipline. Worse power, and then there was like the stolen base chance of just skyrocketing to a large. So it's kind of one of those like, and then he had an injury, right? The wrist injury. So it's kind of one of these like, what, you know, do we just toss this out as like outlier, or are we buying into, you know, a mix of two seasons kind of thing, right? So I think those are tough when you see something kind of, I would say, like somewhat drastically different than what we've seen, and then trying to be like, So.
No, despite how much we love the mascot, Luis Rengifo on this show, he is kind of like for all the reasons you said, like he is the kind of the perfect storm of a tough box, because like you said, we had this change, but then we also had injuries that cut short the sample size to begin with. And like people want to know, is this change for real for 2025? Or is he going to revert back to the track record? And it's like, as box writers, we don't know. Like there's a chance either one could happen. And with the limited sample size, like, it clouds that even further. So that's a good answer.
Very fair. I will not hold that against you. You're okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So which box or boxes when you went into it, got a preconceived notion on a guy, either because you had him on a team or what, you have your thoughts on him, but then you write the box and you're like, oh, okay, I like him better than I thought. Who was that for this year? Like a guy who you were high on leaving the process before you entered it?
I mean, I'm definitely biased towards Bryce Miller, but I've been studying him almost all year long. So it's kind of like, you're just like, okay, cool. You know, like, and I think the cool thing about the forecaster is like, we take some time off. So it's like, you're kind of like looking back and you're like, just refreshing or almost like reviewing for a test. I think the other one would probably be, and maybe it's Brian Reynolds was a one where it's like, and I think, you know, we talked about this last year maybe, but some of these that are like, they're almost the same, you know, and mm-hmm. and you're just like, instead of being like, yep, just spank it, but you gotta like actually write something in there. And so it's like one of those things where it's like, I expected more of the same. And then you go in, you're like, oh, yep, same. I think Freddie Peralta was kind of like that too. It's just like, and I hadn't had a whole lot of Freddie Peralta. So I was like, oh, like, what did it look like? And then you're just like, oh, like, okay.
Yeah, Brian Reynolds is wild because he's got, and we kind of let off the box with, or you let it off, but just another ho-hum, 600 plate appearance, $20 season is fourth in a row. So it's like, what do you add to that? Because like literally the guy, Brian Reynolds home runs the last four seasons, 24, 27, 24, 24 plate appearances, 646, 614, 640, 692. Like it's just so damn consistent. That could also be like one of the tougher boxes too, because it's just like, what do you say about someone who keeps doing the same thing year over year, which is good from a fantasy standpoint. Like Bubba and I always say, like, we love that kind of boring, but from an analysis, trying to make something fresh, it's a little bit tough. Flip side, which box, like which player were you lower on after you were going through it than when you started?
That's tough. I mean, because I guess
I'm trying to see who did you like crap on?
Hobie Miller.
yeah, I mean, like I really liked Ryan Pepiot just like coming in the season, but then, you know, it's another one of those where it's like, well, it's okay, right? Like it's pretty good. Yeah. But you know, it's hard to speak like too glowingly. I mean, Yuri Perez was another tough box because it's just like one of those, like they've been injured for so long, you're just kind of doing your best. Yeah, I mean, the one I was down on probably just based on my box is probably David Peterson.
Okay. Who's in the Mets rotation as we, I believe, as we yeah. speak. So,
I mean, it just, you know, some people will be like, what's, you know, one, a few metrics, like I kind of default to some of the, you know, B12HQ kind of metrics of the BPX or the XERA, like just some of these that'll give me a quick glimpse at some of the skills and stuff like that. And it just doesn't look real great, you know. Even when I didn't put it in the box, but even when I dive into David Peterson, like Arsenal stuff, it's like, it's all right, but it doesn't like, it doesn't overwhelm me, I guess. You know what I mean? Like results were better than the skills, in my opinion. So
for sure. 2.78 ERA last year, which yeah. Oof. I think we're projecting, or the forecasts are 3.384 is what we've got in the book. So that's a pretty major fallback for Peterson.
Yeah, and that checks out because there's always been a guy he gets that low ERA still like a 1.3 whip because he just can't stop walking people, which is always so much fun with David Peterson. So yeah. I could see that being one that leaves you a little less excited when you finish writing that one for sure.
Yeah, I think the other guy that I realized I just forgot that I wrote about, Austin Riley, was another guy that I was just high on last year and high on before the injury. Like, you know, all the skills said more power, more power, more power, and then, you know, he gets hurt. So that's another guy that I'd probably be buying into. All the metrics screamed more power. We just didn't quite see the massive breakout or whatever, you know, the kind of bounce back or regression or whatever word we want to use. So
yep.
All right, that was fun stuff as usual, Corbin. We're gonna wrap it up there, but another year in the books, you know, looking forward to doing this all over again next year for year four for Corbin Young as he continues to go through it, and eventually he can edit Ryan's stuff. It's gonna be great just to
rules reverse, that's right, all
that. And If you had to give, we'll wrap it up with this, and I know this is not on the outline, but if you had to give one, I guess, word of advice for a first-time reader, attacking the forecaster, where would you tell them to kind of go? Because there's a lot. There's the player boxes. There's the good data articles. There's we all like Ryan always talks about the encyclopedia of fantasy. Where would you go, Corbin, if you were going to open it for the first time?
Yeah, I'd probably start at the front with some of the kind of the research. You know, some of the stuff that even in season that I know at least I refer to in some of my articles, like just some of the research of like, I'll just throw one out related to like, let's say home run per fly ball and XPX or something, right? That like some of those, I like there's some research in there that I can reference yep. as like, these are things that we can project, you know, during the season or whatever, if we see these like weird, you know, things in there or if, like just a quick example would be like, let's say someone's got a super high home run to fly ball rate, but if they're like, you know, crushing an XPX and they're just outlier, like there's no reason to expect some regression, if that makes sense, right? Like there's some research in there like that, that I'll go back to. I know Ryan talks about ball rate a ton. There's a, you know, ton of research in there about some of that stuff and how that can be more kind of just, you know, better to talk about control, if that makes sense, right? Which is totally straightforward, like, right? There's balls and different kinds of strikes and stuff. I think some of those, I think I use the player boxes more as like, let's say there's just a player that I'm just haven't even researched one bit and I want to get a, you know, a quick, you know, just quick look at what do they got to say about them, right? Kind of thing. I think that's good. And I do like the way that, you know, baseball YouTube site set up and then just the way the player box is, I can scan so many things just like right across quickly. It's all there. I don't have to have, you know, I mean, you could be weird like us, I guess, and have like five tabs.
Wouldn't recommend it, but
I'm going into the Baseball Savant search and I'm clicking through the filters and then I'm searching, clicking, I want induced vertical break and yeah, you know, like,
yeah, exactly.
But it's like, but all the, you know, basics to get you going is right on those player boxes if you got a question about a player. And so, yeah, I would stick with some of the research stuff in the front. And like I said, I try to refer back to it. I know Ryan does. You know, I'm trying to be better about the QBAP stuff. I know you mentioned that, and then that reminded me to just keep going, looking back on some of that stuff because it's just, again, all that's in the forecaster. But yeah, some of the research stuff and find something that looks interesting. And, you know, there's a lot of smarter people than me writing in there. So, you know, like just learn from other people, I think is the purpose of how I look at some of this stuff, is like learning from other people and their information and their research. So
obviously they're smarter people than me, 'cause I have two award winners sitting next to me on the screen right now. So that's been well established, but we attack the book similar, Corbin. I like the research in the front, and I've mentioned like I use the player boxes when I'm in need of like figuring certain things out on players. So very similar, my friend. But on that note, appreciate you joining us. Make sure y'all check him out on Twitter at Corbin_Young21 and look forward to doing it again sometime, my friend.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Corbin. Appreciate it, man.
And here we are with part two of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 196, our second Baseball HQ forecaster, kind of behind-the-scenes look at the fantasy baseball Bible, as some have called it. We had a great show that dropped last Thursday with three outstanding writers. We had Corbin Young lead the show off here and bringing up the final part on these previews, or behind the scenes, as you want to call it, is an individual who has a big part to do with Baseball HQ. He is the co-editor. He's basically the right-hand man or left-hand man, depends on how they want to talk about it, with Brent Hershey at Baseball HQ. Technically, I like to think of him as one of Ryan's bosses because Ryan doesn't have many, so that's a lot of fun as well. You can find him on Twitter at RayHQ. Ray Murphy, how you doing, my friend?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. It's always a good time.
Absolutely. I don't know if I can you know, I don't think I can play the Ryan's boss role in the way you're looking for it, Bubba. It's really more about, you know, keeping him happy than telling him what to do, which I, from your perspective, sounds like it would give you a lot less satisfaction. So need to go into those stories.
Attempted dig by Bubba backfires. I always like when that happens. Similar to the Brandon Drury forecaster box of last year with our other co-editor. Yeah, on the show. Thanks for joining us, Ray. I'm excited. We are, I guess, saving the highest up the food chain for last out of our
five. Oh, you have Ron coming after me? Is that how this works?
No, you are the highest we go on this one. We had some awesome guests on episode one. Corbin did his thing as well. Great job with him. And we've got you to round it out. So we're excited, man.
Yeah, I will confess I am still working through last week's episode. I've listened to Chris and Tom, but I have not gotten to Corbin yet. So
awesome.
Was good though.
Yeah, it was fun talking to. I enjoy these episodes because it. I always say I'm a broken record on this show for each guest, but it's fun seeing all the work you guys put in to the forecaster because it is like everyone's go to. So it's nice to see all the fine tuning that goes on behind it. All the like we talked about on the previous show, it's all one voice in the end is what it kind of based on the structure, which is really unique to a fantasy, like I guess preview or whatever people want to call it for your research. So it's a very, very cool setup. So Ray, let's just start from the top here. How do you and Brent split things up for being co-editors for this book?
Yeah, so there's it kind of works similarly between the book and the site. The division of labor we sort of have is I handle the data and the tools and Brent handles the written side. So in terms of when I engage in this process, it's actually pretty well before the end of the season. I spent, you know, we have conversations even going back. I often joke that I come back from vacation and like taking a week off in like mid-August and I come back and like, forecaster season, you know, time to get cooking. But it's you know, it starts with conversations about, are we changing anything in the player boxes? Do we need a new column, a new data element? And then honestly, one of the things that takes a chunk of my time in September is the process of figuring out who actually gets a player box. You know, it's there's actually a fair amount of labor that goes into that. You can imagine you start with a sort of, you know, all players by plate appearances and all pitchers by innings, right? And you work your way down. But, you know, especially with the pitchers, so many injuries, so many, guys who normally wouldn't make the, you know, top 419 or whatever it is by innings cut off that need to get in there for some reason. And then you get into prospects and things like that. And it's one of those things that I go through that exercise and I probably spend way more time on it because I live in terror of missing someone. There was the year, it's gotta be 10, 12 years now. What year was it that A-Rod was suspended for?
That's the example I was thinking of, the A-Rod. Yeah.
Like I did not put him on the list of batters.
And just completely out of sight, out of mind. And it's like, oh,
it's like, oh, I forgot somebody important, you know? Well, I'm still scarred by that however many years later. So I make my list and check it 17 times is basically what I end up doing in the month of September.
Yeah, because Ryan's mentioned it before, is the one thing that's really unique about this book is it comes out so early, but it's also printed. Like, this is it. Like, we're not having multiple, like, updates. It's not a living, like, e-file out there. So, like, if you miss someone, like you're saying, it really isn't a whole lot going back on that one, which makes it fun. So, that is a great point. I see, these are the things I don't think about when I'm reading the book that are kind of interesting to get to. So you get your list, you check it twice. You're the Santa Claus of the book, apparently. Anything else you're doing there with Brent before, like, you give marching orders or Brent gives marching orders to the writers and whatnot?
Yeah. So there's, you know, the up front, that's a lot of what I'm doing. One of the things, you had Corbin on you work with him, Ryan. This was his second or third year on the team. Is that
third year? Yeah.
So one of the other things we do is, you know, we got to decide who actually is going to be the staff of writers for it. And we actually have sort of a, we don't call it a tryout process, but a like a trial page process where we'll give a page or three to a couple of new writers and, you know, kind of, you know, give them the instruction set that I know you guys talked about with the guys on last week's episode, but like try to see like, you know, how quickly they can pick up the forecaster voice, because there's a certain know it when you see it element to it that, you know, we always try to turn the staff over, you know, bring somebody new in every year, just from a development point of view. We had Zach Larson in this year, and he was one of our best rookies in several years. And part of that is we spend some time in September trying to sort of rip the Band-Aid off so that when you get that blank page in front of you in October, you're not like, oh my God, what do I do?
It definitely is. I don't know if tip of the iceberg is the right metaphor for this, because there is, it's a damn big iceberg what folks see at the top when the book actually comes out. But just to vouch for it, right, there is an entire mountain of work that goes on before we even, basically what Ray said, before we even start. There's other even, I mean, things, and you can kind of take this however you want, Ray. There are other aspects of a player box that are like your standard, your core HQ stats, but then now we've got some Statcast built in there, which we don't currently have on HQ. So there's also this data process, right, of melding together various data sources. There's minor league stuff all in there, combining minor league equivalents with major league stats. There's all that stuff that goes into one actual player box.
I don't know
if people recognize how much work goes into that as well.
And, you know, it's funny you bring that up, because I could have brought it up as part of my previous answer, and I didn't. I think maybe because the scars are sort of still healing from this year's process. I mean, one of the things you think about, as you guys know and many listeners know, we went through a whole website redesign, yeah. You know, within the last year. You know, we launched that in February of 2024. So, you know, we keep joking about that process. Like, we're almost one full trip around the sun now, and have done like everything we need to for the first time on the new site. But the book was a giant lift for that from a data point of view, because we had an all new database in the back end. And, you know, for years now, we've had, okay, we give our tech team, you know, go run the same queries and data extracts that you've run, and it gives us the data back in exactly the same format. And we just kind of plug it into the forecaster player pages, which in the back end, as you could probably tell from the layout, are, you know, just a giant Excel template. But all of the guts of all that, all those stats had to get sucked out of different places in the database than they used to be. We had to rework all of that. And there was a whole process where, you know, in some cases we were given pages to the writers that the data had only been baked hours earlier, which was just, you know, a whole building the plane while you're flying a kind of experience for the month of October that I'm glad I don't have to go through anymore. I will also interrupt and say I have the actual.
Oh, I saw you tweet that.
We have a live hard copy.
The first two tweets I saw was from Ray and from Chandler, and I'm like, oh, connections must be nice in this way, huh?
Ron got his on Friday night, and I think this might be the first time in 30 whatever years it is that Ron actually got the book first, so he was quite pleased about that. And I was out doing some holiday shopping on Saturday afternoon and came back to the usual, you know, collection of boxes on my front stoop, and one of them I was kind of eyeing as I came down the driveway, like, that box looks interestingly shaped, you know. When running in the house, cut it open, I'm like, woo!
Perfect.
That is so awesome. I
know you guys were talking on last week's show about them coming out soon. They actually are in the wild now. And they should
check the mailbox.
They should be leaving Iowa, Wisconsin, or whatever town in Wisconsin is, it's not Iowa.
Fond du Lac?
Fond du Lac, that's it.
I'll probably get roasted for mispronouncing that.
Yeah, they should be leaving Fond du Lac today, I understand it, for the envelopes with only one book in it. I got a box with a dozen or so of them in here that were a couple of days in advance of that. But they are, we are now at the mercy of the USPS.
Okay, excellent. Breaking news on that one. So if listeners are out there that I have ordered their forecaster, check those boxes. You should get it this week. I don't think there is like a correlation with how close you are to Wisconsin and how quickly you get it. Cause I remember a couple of years ago, I was one of the first ones to get it, and I'm in Oregon, which is nowhere near Wisconsin. So keep the faith, check those boxes. One thing, Ray, that I want to dive into a little bit more, because I don't know how this process works. I feel like I know a good bit of how the forecaster process works, but what we've been talking about with other guests on the show is basically that writer editor back and forth, and how we actually write up a box and that sort of thing. For my aspect, I'm an editor, so I write my own boxes. I also work with Corbin, with Brian Rudd, on getting them ready to go. From my point, my viewpoint in the process, when I think a box or a whole entire page is good to go, I send it up to Brent and say, this is ready for you. And then I quietly cross my fingers and hope to never hear from Brent again on that page, because then it means it got sent back to me for something. And that hasn't happened in a little while. But what does that process, once it gets out of my hands and editor's hands and goes up the chain to Brent, to you, and then ultimately, I think, to Ron for kind of the final checkoff, what is that like, that those final stages of prepping a player page?
Yes. So that actually, what happens from there actually dovetails with the sort of division of labor that we were talking about earlier, where Brent handles sort of everything on the written side, and I'm worrying primarily about the data, the tools, in this case, the projection and the data in the box. So Brent gets the page from you, Ryan, and he primarily goes through and edits the 7 comments on the page. And he's going to do everything from make sure they're actually fitting in the box to, you know, grammar and that sort of thing. And also to, of course, make sure the analysis makes sense, right? And that's where he's reading along with the actual written comment that goes in the box to the reader. Ryan, as you well know, there's a sort of a separate box on the side where we make comments about the projection. Does the projection need to be revised, et cetera? So Brent looks at those and often will augment the note that's there about the projection and say, okay, I strongly agree with this, or we definitely need to do that, or I don't fully believe this up. You know, let me know what you think, that kind of thing. So Brent gives me a version of the page where he's vetted the comments and offered his thoughts on the projections. And I take it and I now go back into the master Excel file, and where I've got, the important thing is I've got the control of the projections there. So my primary role is to revise the projections both as they stand, because I look at them and I think something needs to change, or we have all those projection comments that need to change that have been made by the writer, by you as an editor, Ryan, and then by Brent. But then the one of the biggest things I'm looking for is consistency between the projection that we're going to have in the book and what the commentary says. You know, if we're going to sit here and say in the box, like, expect more of the same, we better not be projecting $10 more of value and 15 more home runs, you know, stuff like that. You know, we want those things to be aligned. I was looking through some boxes today and I came across Connor Wong's box, which is actually one that I wrote. So this was a little bit easier, and then I was taking my own projection comment. So, you know, I kind of believed what I commented about in the projection, but you can imagine it would have come from somebody on your team, Ryan. It would work the same way. The last sentence in Wong's box says, expect a batting average closer to 250 than 280, right? Which right. is, which if you're going to write that in the box,
we, the we better damn project.
Yeah. You better not say 279, right?
Yes.
So that's a big part of what I do, is I sit there and, you know, make sure there's alignment between the projection and the box, and that I believe both of them.
And then real quick, and then do you cross your fingers once you send it up to Ron that it never gets back to you?
Yeah, for sure. You know, that process with Brent and I, you know, that you know, much like everything Brent and I do, is usually pretty closely aligned. That's not really a throw it over the wall thing. Brent will leave the page in my to-do folder, but we're often talking about, especially the higher profile projections, a lot in Slack and going back and forth. And, you know, Brent has just looked at it an hour ago, now I'm looking at it. But generally what happens is, the way the workflow goes is, I tend to be, as we've talked before, Ryan, I tend to be a pretty late night worker during forecaster season. So East Coast time, like, I'm often doing this stuff after midnight, and I will load a batch of pages every day, every night before I go to bed for Ron, and Ron will do his final edit on them the next day. very rarely will he actually come back and engage in further discussion. It has happened, especially if I flag something for him where, you know, Brent and I aren't, you know, in full agreement or don't know how to handle something. But mostly Ron just has the last cut. And like everyone else, I am not above waiting until Ron PDFs a page and I know it's final, and then going into the folder and opening up the PDF and seeing if it's actually what, you know, what it looked like when I handed it to him, right? Because that that does happen, even to me.
Just a real quick question on the I guess the levels of this. So just to clarify, so it's writers, the initial editors, it's Ray and Brent, and then Ron has the final on everything.
Okay, his name on the book, his final on everything. Yep.
Okay, I know it's his deal and everything, but I know he's also like kind of taking a step back from the all the time content. So I just want to like clarify that. Okay, that's pretty crazy stuff. They're awesome stuff, but that's just another point of the amount of times things are checked before it gets in the book. It goes a long ways. I did want to ask you about the projections again, though, because you talked about your process, you're tweaking it, this and that. I want to bring it to the start. You know, you said you have to pick all these players, make sure you get all the right ones in the book, so on and so forth. Obviously, you need to have projections for all of these. What is that process like for you? It's like not you, you probably have your secret sauce. You don't have to give all that kind of stuff away. But, you know, you can't just like hit one button usually and it all pops up unless you do. And that's awesome. But how do you go about getting those initial projections to get the party started?
Yeah, so it is a good question. And there's, as you say, there's a fair amount that goes into it. So it leans on the same process we use for projections on the website. So one of the things that happens is when I buy the last weekend of the regular season, I've got the exact list of players who are going to be in the book. And hopefully I haven't forgotten A-Rod. But once I do that, I pass that list out to all the guys who manage the playing time on the website. And I say, does everybody in the book take your best stab at projecting playing time for 2025. Now that may not be the easiest thing in the world to do. And by, of course, the last week of September, any number of guys are zeroed out because of injury or whatever. And we need to restore their playing time to give them just a baseline, something that we can work with in the book for 2025. Right. So that happens at the beginning of the process. And then this big old Excel spreadsheet that I'm talking about, where we generate the player boxes, does a, not unlike Marcel or Zips, you know, multi-year weighted average of the five-year stat line in the player box. And that's actually something I'm glad to start forgetting about this now, but it's something I became intimately familiar with around the 2020 season, because the stupid 2020 season screwed with those 5-year projections like longer than you could possibly imagine. We couldn't sit here and do, okay, let's do 40% from 2024 and 30% from 2023. But then when you were dealing with the stupid 2020 season, we're like, well, I want to discount that. I don't want to weigh that to as a full season. So the weightings were all off. Now that 2020 is the oldest season in the box, we're finally at the point where that thing is getting just naturally the weighting it deserves. But you know, the combination, back to your question, the combination of having a baseline playing time and then a pretty basic 5-year weighted average of the stats in the box generates the projection all in one shot. But you can imagine with either one of those things, the playing time component or the performance component of it, the very first projection that pops out of the box there often needs a little bit of spit polishing or tuning or flat out rewriting.
Awesome. Especially I've noticed some of the, like the rookies, guys that I think that needs usually, and that's not a fault on the projection system by any means. It's more, I think the big takeaway to this, and I use the Forecaster, but I have been using them in my drafts for the past, whatever, since you sent them to me, Ray, is I think it's important to know that the projections that we have in the Forecaster have not only been, you know, projected using a system to get that baseline projection, but they've also been poured over by at least four different people and looked at. And like, I have a ton a ton of faith. The playing time, we can always debate. It's whatever. It's October when we're doing this. But I put a ton of stock into especially the rate stats and the skills that we have projected in the forecaster, because it is, we've kind of hit it like at multiple angles by that point.
It's incredibly important. And then that, what you just said, is the answer to the question that I get all the time about that. Like, do you revise the projections? And sure, as you said, we revise the playing time all the time between now and opening day, right? But the rate projections themselves, I've got them open on my screen right now. I'm starting to work on the first projections for the website, which will be up and running probably later this week. But those immediately fall into two categories, the two categories being the ones that come from the book that got all of that review you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And then the other ones that we just whip up from, you know, MLEs or prior year projections for, you know, middle relievers, backup catchers, rookies, guys who didn't have a full player box in the book. And yeah, I need a very good reason to go and touch one of those forecaster rate projections that got those four levels of review. I will, of course, do standard changes for park factors and stuff like that for a guy who gets traded or signs with a new team or whatever. But to look at one of those projections that got all of that attention, even though it was October, and say, no, that's wrong, I'm going to change that, I very rarely do that.
There needs to be a very obvious reason or case for to do so. No, that makes a ton of sense. Switching gears a little bit from the projection, that was fascinating stuff. We have talked about and readers and whatnot, that kind of their favorite sections and typical sections of the book. Typically the player boxes, like the ones probably the most common that folks go to, the research abstracts. I talk about the encyclopedia all the time. In your opinion, because there's, especially from a data aspect, is there a section that's underrated in terms of something that like doesn't get talked about that much yet is extremely useful that is in the book?
Yeah, you know, I really like back in the leaderboard section. You know, one of the things we always talk about is the difference between what you can do in print and what you can do on a website, right? And not, you know, obviously everything on the printed page here is not sortable for, you know, you can't just, you know, run a new filter on this, et cetera. But I really like the projected leaderboards in the back, like the fact that you can go to a list of pitchers, starting pitchers with the highest strikeout rates, and just look at a list like that and say, yep, that makes sense to me. Or scan down the list and be like, what is Nick Pivetta doing at like number 12 on this list? Like, I didn't expect that. Just, you know, even just being able to scan a single number with a sorted list, you know, you have some preconceived notion in your head of the guys who should be on that list. And then you look at the actual list and you're like, there's a few names here I wasn't expecting. That's fodder for guys I need to go look at or take a closer look at or get more familiar with or value differently in my drafts.
That makes a ton of sense. And I think a more efficient way of wading through the player pool is looking at those outliers with those leaderboards, as opposed to looking through every single box by box by box. Both are good, but that makes sense.
It is fascinating how so many people have so many different ways of attacking the forecaster. So it's very, very interesting in that regard. And we talk player boxes because that's the common thing. Like Ryan said, everyone wants player boxes. So we'll shift to that right here with you, Ray, because, you know, contrary to the beliefs, it's not just projections, it's not just editing, it's all this other stuff. Ray had like 11 pages of players. Yeah. So Ray has been a legitimate machine.
Yeah.
With the quick math, that's 77 players, I think, if I did it right. Not sure. Yeah. So yeah, not like he didn't have anything else to do. He wrote up a bunch of player boxes himself. So a question that we ask every person we've had on, Ray, is, what is your process? Like Ryan loves to say, when you get that sheet and it's just blank, how do you go from looking at that, maybe looking at the stats on the page, and then, you know, finishing the box?
You know, it's funny. I do as many pages as I do because I just love that process that you're talking about of just staring at a blank player box. You know, some of us who have been doing this for a long time often joke that, you know, I mean, there are, if you go to page 3 or, you know, the acknowledgments page, there are 13 or 14 guys it takes to write up all these boxes. But we often joke with Ron that one of these years we're going to, you know, we all just love writing the boxes so much. We're going to cut it down to like five and just do like, you know, just do 30 pages each. Cause if I had my druthers, I wouldn't be sitting here editing the projections. I would write 150 of these. Cause like, I just have fun with them. Yeah. It probably won't ever actually happen, but you know, that would be, given unlimited time, that's where I would spend it. But it's funny. I was listening to Chris Olson's process, as he described it the other night, with his Google Doc and his scratch pad. And, you know, he sounds like a true writer doing that. My process is nothing like that. But I almost feel like it, probably just because I've been looking at this format for so long, that I have this, you know, what do the chess players say? See the whole board. Like, I just stare at the box. I can't tell you where my eyes go. I couldn't say I go to this column or that column. I just kind of like absorb it. And, you know, it's just, I feel, you know, it's such an elegant representation in such a concise space of a player's skill that I just sit there and, you know, for lack of a better term, just like marinate on it for a little while and bounce around with it. And then hopefully come up with a thread to pull out of something to write about.
That's awesome. That's next level stuff. You just stare at it and it
goes full Matrix on us.
Well, you've been doing it for how long? How long have you been writing on the four? Usually we start with that, but I know it's been.
Yeah, it was the year that Ron first farmed it out, when Ron finally threw up his arms and said, "I can't do this myself," which is a whole other conversation.
Yeah, I'm about to say, happened. Good Lord,
you wouldn't have he used to do every single. Yes. Yes.
I mean, he would joke in the introduction every year about, you know, locking himself in his office for 6 weeks with periodic bathroom breaks. And I don't think it was an exaggeration.
No, you joked about five people writing all the boxes. Good.
Yeah. But that was, it was either 2003 or 2004. So I am in the neighborhood of 22 years. Editions. Ooh. Now.
High school graduation year for me, 2003.
Yeah, just had to throw that in, didn't you?
Just had to throw that in. Not only do I like to jab up a little bit, but I'll do it to some some.
Ryan's good at acting like he's really young when he's nearly 40 as well.
I know.
So
I turned.
He can. I
turned four. The 4-0 comes next year for me, yeah. So I'm not too far away. All right, man. Quick hits on some boxes here, and we've kind of run through this exercise with some of the editors, or with some of the other writers that we've had, but let's start with your favorite box that you wrote for the 2025 forecaster.
I think my favorite box was actually kind of funny. It was kind of when I tend to get talking about all the you know, the work that goes on in October. I tend to get kind of punchy or chippy at times, and I think I got a little chippy on Jake Irvin.
Okay.
Understandably so. Yes.
Because, you know, I looked at him, and, you know, with pitchers, obviously so much of what we do now is diving into pitch mixes and pitch changes and all that stuff that, you know, Ryan in particular spent so much time talking about. But I was down that rabbit hole with Jake Irvin, and I just got really mad.
Where are we at? Where are we at with Jake Irvin?
This is good. Yes. I'm reading it as we're talking.
Yeah. Starts with pitchers are maddening, volume, and then Roman numerals, probably 2000. Smacks head again, pitchers, man. Yeah. I have found that emotion, well, maybe not emotion is the right word. I have bagged some players before where, like, I'm just like, one year I compared like Nick Markakis to a washing machine.
Yes. Can you enlighten me on how?
What's that?
Can you enlighten me how he's comparable to a washing
machine? Like an old washing, like those appliances, you know, built in like the 70s, just not sexy, but just reliable and will work forever. It's actually kind of a compliment to
Nick Markakis. I was about to say, it sounds pretty nice all of a sudden.
But I remember like bashing Adam Engel too one year. Yeah.
Gave
Jake Irvin that.
Yeah, it was a little bit of that. It was my canonical example. I am not the funny guy that Chris Olson is, but going, you know, the one I always still refer to now is a good 10 years ago. You remember Clayton Richard, the Padres, you know, soft tossing lefty who had a few good years, mostly because he pitched in Petco, especially when Petco was a cavern. And it was the year that I think when we were writing the forecast, or the Padres actually announced that they were moving the fences in. And so, and so in the box, I went through this whole thing of the Padres construction workers went out to move the left field fence and found Clayton Richard chained to it and wouldn't let them tear it down because no one needed to stay at 410 feet. That's because funny. That was how he made his living.
That's good. That's good. So contrary to your favorite box, what was one of the tougher boxes for you to write? Like, you looked at it and you're like, I don't even know what this, like, your vision quest didn't come through on this play right out the gate.
Didn't materialize, right?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We made a change last year to have Chris Blessing write up prospects, which I greatly appreciate because yeah. I consistently found those to be some of the hardest guys to write up for some of the reasons that Ryan mentioned 2 minutes ago, just the lack of data. And, you know, there's so much, you know, it's a different skill to project what a prospect is going to do. And, you know, so much of the prospect box here in the book is blank because we don't have the kind of track record to work from. So with that problem solved for me, I'm now left with the guys that Chris doesn't cover, you know, the rookies or guys who have just reached the majors. Jackson Holliday is a good one who I had to write up this year. And it's funny, I have a bunch of ties to artists in my family. Like, my sister's an artist, my daughter's taking art lessons now. And like, one of the things that I've heard them say before is you have to draw what you see, what your eye sees, not what you think you see. And I think that's relevant to like Jackson Holliday. We could sit here and talk about what, you know, Jackson Holliday, what we think Jackson Holliday is going to be. And that's one conversation. If you're Chris Blessing, you know, from the prospect and tools point of view, it's another conversation from what this box says. And when I'm writing what the box says, I feel like I have to stick to what the box says.
That makes a ton of sense. Yeah. I mean, because the box for Jackson Holliday, I don't have it. I just pulled it up. Yeah. It's
there's not a lot there.
Well, and the points are accurate that you wrote about, like, this is what he is right now. So, yeah.
And just to dive a little bit more on what Ray talked about with Chris Blessing now writing some boxes for readers out there, any box that, well, it's obviously, it's a prospect. So like Jackson Job is one, Ray, that was on one of your pages that Chris wrote up. So any commentary that ends in CB in parentheses at the end of it, throw your complaints towards Chris Blessing on that one. But Chris wrote up all those. And that is a nice change, because I agree, trying to write up those like sheer prospects with very little major league time was pretty brutal. So player you're most high on after writing their box in 2025.
I think it's I have sort of the pitcher equivalent of what Chris Olson was telling you about with Jackson Merrill, you know, where Merrill had, you know, the great rookie year, and he wanted to say, you know, and Chris went on to say this can get even better. I think I was on the pitcher side, I was surprised by Michael King and how good that year was this year. And not just how good it was, but the fact that we can sit here and say it looks very, very repeatable, that, you know, I think from a, you know, he handled so much volume that I don't know how much we can say it's going to get better, but that he was so seamless in moving forward in the rotation. And that I think we got to think of him as, you know, maybe the sub ace here now. And I think, you know, when I was looking at the blank box, that was not the first place my brain went.
That's very, very true. It's a fun one to come draft day, because you have to pay the price now. So things are a little different on that. On the flip side of that, who is a player you might be lower on now that you completed his box, and you're like, maybe he's not as good as I thought?
Yeah, I went back and I got two answers on this one. I'll give you the one that changed after the book was written. I think that's Yusei Kikuchi, because obviously the Astros unlocked a lot of good in him in August and September last year. And I have to ask the obvious questions about whether the Angels will know what the Astros were doing and or be able to replicate it. And let's not forget, not break him. So, you know, I think I'm probably a little more worried about Kikuchi than if it was, you know, in some hypothetical world where he re-signed in Houston and Houston said, keep doing what you did when you got here.
No, that's a very, very scary point for us all. Yes.
That's another one too, where like basically you're Kikuchi's tough because there was this like second half growth, like you said, Ray, and there was this kind of this pitch mix change to back it up. But I like how you wrote it, because it's all about, you know, can he lean on the slider for a full season? And you kind of leave it out there because A, we don't know if he's going to do that, especially with a new team. And yeah, let's just hope the Angels don't unbreak him, like you said. So well, real quick, I drafted, I'm in a draft and hold, and it's like the 40th round. And I was anybody I before I draft them, I always look at their forecaster box first. And one of your, this is probably my favorite box that you wrote, Ray. I need saves badly. And so I look up Tyler Kinley.
Yep. Oh. I knew where you were going.
There, you could have just written the entire box with this one sentence and how you started it out. And you started out, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. And I just thought that was just absolutely, I'm like, God, yep. I guess I'll draft him. It's the 40.
Mic drop. Yeah. Brent and I just drafted him in like round 38 of our DC over the weekend too.
Well, so. Then we'll go down on that ship together.
Yeah. I think we're hoping for 6 good weeks before the elbow falls off.
Yes. Yep. Same. Yep. Same.
Well, all right, Ray, we're going to wrap things up there. Appreciate you joining us and chatting up the forecaster as we all enjoy it. And soon, hopefully, coming to all of our mailboxes just in time for the holidays. But thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Always a pleasure. You do great stuff.
Awesome. Thanks, Ray. Well, we'll wrap it up there. And you can make sure you follow Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and I am at BD Intric. This is Bubba and the Bloom, episode 196. Catch y'all next time.